Morning. I want to welcome you to Crossbridge this morning, and especially if you're with us and you're a guest, there's a handful of new people I got to see when we were out there, and I hope that you find Crossbridge as a welcoming place. I find it as a place that's hard to unscrew little knobs here. There we go. Will, you're stronger than you look. There you are. I'm really glad that you're here with us this morning. You may have come out to Trunk or Treat last week and you thought, oh, that's a pretty decent place. They gave me candy. I'll go back. And if you're here because of that, I'm thankful that candy has allowed you the privilege of being with us, or us the privilege to be with you. And regardless of where you are this morning in your spiritual journey, I pray that as we progress together that, you know, as a church, we really wanted to help everyone we can take one step closer to Jesus from wherever you are now. When you leave, that you would say, you know what, there's something there for me. So that's what our hope is for you. And we start a new 3-week series this week called Generous Living. And I got to tell you, I am so excited about this series and not excited at the same exact time. And the reason I'm not excited about it is because as I've been praying and as I've been writing and as I've been reading, I thought, you know what, there's parts of my life I'm pretty generous. I like this. And the more I started to read and write and process and pray, I realized I'm very selfish. I'm not nearly as generous as I think I am. And I started to look in the mirror a little differently, and I'm like, ah. Oh. And it just made me dream and wonder, what would it look like if life was lived differently? If it wasn't so much about how much I could accumulate for myself, but how much I could give away, how much I could give of myself. And I know that as I say that, there are some of you here now where you've got flags that have immediately went, phoom. He said generous and giving. He's going to ask me for money. That's what churches do. I know this game. This is just a way for them to get in my wallet. I'm thankful you think that way, because, yes, some churches, that's their approach. I'm thankful I can also stand up here in front of you and be proud and ask for forgiveness at the same time. As a church, we do not focus on money from the pulpit. This isn't our platform to say, please give, 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 give. But at the same time, we believe it's important to how we deal with money is important, because the Bible does talk about it. And so in this series, we will have a talk that's about money. We will, because it's important. But at the same time, we want to look at life that's much more holistic. And I will tell you, as a church, we have not talked about money in almost 2 years. So if you're like, oh, they always do, you can't use that one, okay? You can't use that. This is not something, we had it planned, I think our preaching team, we had it planned for last January, and we got snowed out. So that was, we just saw as God's will. It's like, this isn't the time to talk about it. And we're like, all right, we'll just cancel church. And that's what we ran with. But, you know, it's funny, there are certain things in our life that cause us all this stress, and I think it's because we're out of balance. And the American Psychological Association says this when it comes to stress. It says the most commonly reported sources of stress include money, which is 2/3 of people, right? 64%, almost 2/3 of people say that this is a very or somewhat significant source of stress. Before we go any further, is there anybody in here who can relate to that besides me? So statistically, okay, cool, yes! So it's more than 2/3. If you're a teenager, immediately you should be like, yes, because you have the most disposable income. It's great. Work, stress, I get that, 60%. The economy, family responsibilities, and personal health concerns, these are the things that bring the most stress. And I think if this were done this week, you could put presidential election up there for Tuesday. This brings stress for our country. You know, I wonder how many of us would be glad to give up more money, since that's the number one stress. I thought I'd pick it apart really quick. I wonder how many of us would be willing to give up a little more money for the resource that I think is the most valuable for our culture. If you live anywhere in between New York and Washington, D.C., I'd argue that we have a resource that's a little more valuable than money, and it's time. Time, I'd argue, for our culture is far more important than money, because we try to manage this, and many in our culture will grab time by the horns, and we're just like, I will wrestle you into submission until you do what I want. and I will pack you out. I will overdo in so many areas of my life to show that I own you, time. You are mine. Now, we've all been given 24 hours in a day, except for today, you've been given 25, and I hope you've used that hour well, okay? You got a bonus. It gets taken away from you later, but for now, you got it. I hope you used it for sleep, and your kids did. No. So you're like, if not if you have little ones. I'm sorry. I remember that. But, you know, it's funny. If you are male or female, if you're young, if you're old, if you're rich or if you're poor, you only have 24 hours. We are all on the same playing field when it comes to this resource. And it's just a funny thing, time. And it's funny to think about it because I believe that deep down, all of us want to live a generous life, a life that I define as where you can give of who you are to the people in need around you. But when it comes to time, we're so protective of this resource, of this aspect of our life, that we overprogram it and we're left in a place where we have nothing left to give. We have nothing left to give. And we are busy, aren't we? I mean, busyness has become the default state for too many of us. We're masters at overcommitting, believing the facade that we can actually multitask. I love that. People are like, I'm a great multitasker. No, we're not. We get half as much done in just the same amount of time, and we think we're being more productive because maybe now there's three computer screens open in front of us. I get this. I experience this. And my fear is that when it comes to living a generous life, that our lives, internally and externally, are so busy and panicked that we have little time for God or for people around us. And to explore this a little more and to figure out the question that I have with this is like, okay, if I'm already stressed out, how do I get more time then? Can I just get a 25th hour? I'd like that. Can we do this day every day? How do we get more time? I believe we can. We can get more time in our day. But it only comes from slowing down. The only way to gain time, and that seems so countercultural, is we have to slow our pace down. And when we slow our pace down, I believe we're going to become a people who can identify what's the most important and the best for us, and we could take what's good and okay and not have to do that because we're focused in on what matters most. To explore this morning, I want to look at the story of Jesus, and we're going to be journeying through the Gospel of Mark. So if you have your Bibles with you, we're going to be in Mark, and you're going to want to have it on your phone. If you have a paper one in front of you, grab a pen so you can underline. If you need a Bible, we have some. We'd be happy to give you one. We're going to be kind of highlighting a lot of stuff. And normally what we do on a Sunday morning, if you're a guest with us, is we take one passage and we kind of camp in that passage and pull a bunch of stuff out. But for this week, I want to do something a little different. I want to raise the plane up instead of going right towards the treetops and saying, okay, this is the little passage, and look at a little bit of a bigger story of Jesus. And the story of Jesus is very unique in the Gospel of Mark. If you've never read this account of Jesus' life, to me, it fits the New Jersey culture, okay? It just fits who we are because Mark uses the phrases over and over. He uses the phrases immediately, at once, without delay, quickly, just then. So it's, can you sense this is like a hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. That's how Mark writes this. He uses those phrases 47 times in 16 chapters. He's rushing through the story of Jesus. Now, maybe he's not rushing. I just think he's excited. Do you ever sit with someone who's excited to tell you a story? And then like, and then you're like, whoa. Pace yourself. I do that. I get excited, and you know, Eileen's laughing at me right now, giggling. So I do this. I get how Mark is writing. And so he writes all of this, but in the midst of the hurry up, here we go, on to the next. This is what Jesus did in these 16 chapters. About 17 times throughout these 16 chapters, he has to state over and over, and then Jesus retreated away. And so we're going to catch some rhythm from Jesus where he's always on the go. And I'd argue that his time was just as precious as ours, if not more, because of the amount of people that wanted to be in contact with him all the time. And Jesus will take time to model for us what a slowed down life in the midst of a crazy culture looks like. So let's check this out. We're going to be looking into Mark chapter 1. And at the time that we're going to pick it up, Jesus has gathered all his disciples. He's gone into this town, and immediately people come to see him. He's healed all the, like, people with sicknesses, he's healed. People who are demon-possessed, he's cast out these demons. Everyone wants a piece of Jesus in his time. So his schedule is full, the appointments are packed, and then they're finally all completed. And when they go out, he's given up all this time. It's time to rest and time to go to bed. Let's look at verse 35 after that night. It says this: very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up. He left the house and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Now, Jesus just spent all day at work. And I know it probably is like, well, he was hanging out with people all day. That's not work. Jesus has been packed with needy, both emotionally and physically, people all day. That is exhausting. That's some work. And after that full day of work, if you have that in verse 35, you're going to want to highlight this, because being with God and setting him up as a priority is so huge for Jesus that he goes off to a solitary place to pray. And his disciples wake up that morning because he's up before them, and they start to look for him. It follows up with this. It says, Simon and his companions went to look for him. And when they found him, they exclaimed, everyone's looking for you. That's one of those, like, dude, get back home so we can continue. All the crowds are looking for you. They're here. Everyone is looking for you, Jesus. And Jesus replied, let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so that I can preach there also. That's why I've come. Jesus, after intentionally being with God and knowing that there's this huge crowd looking for him, tells his disciples that they need to go somewhere else. This is funny because for us as a culture, when we can gather a crowd, we do this all the time, right? We try to gather a crowd to gain momentum. And when we gain momentum, we want to market that momentum as best we can to further whatever it is that we're focusing on, whatever event, whatever organization, we're trying to gather the crowd. Jesus goes the opposite direction here. Says, yes, I know there's a crowd, and we could probably market like Jesus for healer in this town, but that's not what we need to do. That's not what I'm here to do. I need to continue to go. And so he takes his disciples and he leaves the crowd. He says no to this major, major opportunity that many of us, I don't think, would be able to say no to. And he leaves. And he starts walking with his disciples one day. And it's a Saturday. And they're hungry. And so they start walking through the fields. And they start to pick the top off of grain, the heads of grain. And they're looking for something to eat. And so the teachers of the law, these are Pharisees who are experts in the Jewish law, they come up to Jesus, and they're not happy with him at all. And they start to get in his face because he's not practicing the discipline or the day of rest. It's known as the Sabbath. Has anybody ever heard that word before, Sabbath? Okay, handful of you. This is a very unique word, and the word Sabbath really means rest. So this is a day that God's given us. It's a 24-hour period, and for the Jews of this time and for today, at Friday at sundown till Saturday at sundown, it's 24 hours where you do nothing. It's nice, right? If you don't like shopping or food shopping, because I know some people are like, I love shopping. That's your Sabbath thing. If you don't like food shopping, don't go food shopping. You don't want to do dishes? Don't do dishes. It'll be okay. They'll be there the next day. And you're not supposed to work. You're supposed to take off. I know you're thinking, Jimmy, that's a pipe dream. We live in South Jersey. That doesn't happen. Well, it did. They took 24 hours off. They weren't supposed to work. That's going to look different for all of us. But for Jesus, going around, walking in a field, picking out some grains of wheat for food, this is not work for him. I don't see him breaking a sweat. He's doing his thing. And no one's happy with him because they have their rules and their regulations. And in chapter 2, so you could turn over a page, in verse 27, his response to them when they get on his case is he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Simply put, Sabbath is a gift from God. It's 24 hours where we can sit back and be reminded that God is in control and we don't have to control everything. for a control freak like myself, it's a wonderful day and a horrible day because I like to control what happens. It's easier for me to manage. But this is God's reminder. You don't have to, man. Jimmy, I've got this. You can trust me. And so Jesus reminds them, you're out here working. You're out here looking for people who are breaking the Sabbath so you could tell them they're doing wrong. That seems exhausting to me. This is a gift that God's given you. Go home. Like, go hang out with your kids. Go to bed and take a nap. That's a good Sabbath activity. I see some people like, You can do that on your Sabbath. It's a beautiful thing. But the story continues. And I like that in this, Jesus, he is God. He has the authority and the power to do whatever he pleases. But he's like, you know, you need to take a day to rest. Even God takes a Sabbath day. And his story continues. He continues to preach. He continues to go to people group after people group. And he's healing and he's teaching. And at one point, he's exhausted. And he has his disciples and he says to them, I want you to go out to preach. So they go out, they start to teach, and they get the first experience of how exhausting this is. And they come back in Mark chapter 6, and you can flip over there. In Mark chapter 6, they are wiped out. They kind of look at Jesus with this like, how do you do this all the time? Is that why you go away in the mornings? Is that what, like, what are you doing here? They're toasted. And so Jesus meets with them. And it says that in chapter 6, verse 31, if they're going to give generously of their time, right at the end there, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. They're wiped. They've not eaten. They're exhausted. And Jesus doesn't say what our culture says. That's awesome, man. If you flip the candle, there's a wick on that end too. And you can burn that one. That's not what Jesus says. He says, come with me. You got to get out of here. We got to find a quiet place, a place of rest. That's what Jesus is talking about. It's nice, right? If you have little kids in your house, you know that this place of quiet and rest is otherwise known as the bathroom. And you're like, oh, so nice. It's quiet. And then all of a sudden under the door, you see them little fingers start wiggling. And you're like, I'm not alone anymore. Oh, my gosh, why are you arguing outside? Why are you keeping beat on the door? Maybe this is my house and not yours. But I feel like it's any time I go in there and I'm like, this is my place of rest. And like, no one's going to get me. They find me. And Jesus is like, you need to find a place where no one's going to find you, where you can go and you can finally let down. A place of solitude, of rest, of relaxation. It's funny. Those little fingers under the door, those distractions, those things that come our way when we're trying to find that rest. Jesus experienced this too. Maybe not with little fingers, but in verse 33, it says, many of those who saw them leaving, because they're ready to go, right? Let's go, come with me to a place of rest and solitude. They get in a boat and they go. And so many of them who saw them leaving recognized them, and they ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of him. This is equivalent to your kid meeting you at the door on your way to the bathroom. And you're like, no, I'll find another one. You know, they've beat me there. And so what does Jesus do? Does he get to that land, see all the people, and he'd be like, yo, I'm just too wiped. So are they. We're done. We're not going. Does he look at the disciples and he's like, guys, it's time to just keep going. You got to, they're here. This is important. What does Jesus do in this situation? When the distractions are right there in verse 34, we read that when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had, what's that word there? Nice and loud with me. What did he have? Compassion. He had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. Jesus had compassion on these people. He saw that they needed him. His disciples are wiped out. And so in verse 45, he's actually going to send them away. But here we learned in 34 that he begins teaching them. He's been rested, right? His disciples have been the ones that are out. He doesn't ask them for more. He takes on the responsibility. And in that moment of taking on the responsibility, instead of saying to them, guys, just help me along with the little things, in verse 35, he actually sends them off in a boat into the middle of the sea to say, guys, you've got to get away. They'll keep coming. They will. If you don't get away, this is the only way it's going to happen. I'll close up shop. And he's going to be the one who dismisses the crowd. He's going to be the one who kind of does all the handshakes at the door. See you later, see you later, see you later. I'll be last to leave. That's what he's doing because he's from a place of rest. His disciples are not. So he sends them away. And in verse 46, after leaving them, that's to the people, he went up on a mountainside to pray. Are you catching a theme here? Jesus stops constantly, slows down his schedule intentionally so that he could be with God. He knows what he's supposed to be doing. So he can say yes to the most important things to say no to the things that don't matter. He's got these places of rest that he's coming from, that he's giving people the best of his time, not the leftovers, where they're looking, and he's looking at these people thinking, oh, will you just shut up? That's not where Jesus is at. And so, while normally I don't do this, I feel like there's a couple things we can pull from this overview of Jesus really quick, and I want to give you four simple steps to slowing down your schedule, so that you have time to generously give to others. And we'll look at them very, very quickly. Very quickly. And the first one is, if you want to slow down your life in order to live a generous life, we've got to prioritize time with God. You have to prioritize time with God. There is no mistake that in this life of Jesus, there are multiple verses where he pulls away and he retreats to be with God. After the crazy nights of being with God, being with people, Jesus needs to be with God. And when he comes out of those and then the whole morning and afternoons filled with people, he needs to go be with God. When the evening is filled with people, he needs to go be with God. He has to find this place with God because that's where his fuel is coming from. That's where his energy is. After the crazy, he goes to be with God. And this isn't out of obligation. This is what mattered most to him. Like I said, as hurried as this gospel is, over and over, Jesus goes to be with God. We have to be intentional about our time. And Jesus' time was primarily in the morning. We see that over and over. And maybe you're like me, you hate mornings. I'm happy when I can get out of bed and not yell at my kids within 5 minutes. So that's a win for me in the morning. I know that a majority of people on our staff are morning people. And so, you know, we'll sit in staff meeting. I'm like, how's your day? And I've got my cup of coffee ready to go. And they're like, I spent an hour with Jesus all morning. And it's good. I'm like, shut up. That's great. Because that's not my time. I can't figure that out. And for the longest time, I felt guilty because pastor after pastor, preacher after preacher is like, start your morning right with Jesus. And I'm like, yes, no, I don't even think Jesus wants to be with me in the morning. I'm not pleasant. Once my French press is done, I'm much happier. And Jesus is like, oh, come on, I'll give you rest. You got to find your time. After my kids get on the bus at 8:15, I got from 8:15 to 8:30 that I know I got 15 minutes there. This is my space to kind of go, all right, God, what is coming on this day? What do I have to do? By lunchtime, I've pretty much forgotten what that is, and there's been some sort of appointment or some sort of action that's taken me off course. I'm like, God, I just need 5 minutes to reset with you. And I find a place of silence and solitude. When my kids aren't at school, it could be anywhere in my house. If you're at an office, you know the place that's quiet. Just go 5 minutes, find that five, and stop. If you have kids who are coming home on the bus, or you go pick them up, find 5 minutes before they get home. It will change your whole attitude to say, God, what's coming up in this time? If you don't prioritize this time, it's not going to happen. It's the first thing that goes in our schedules is time with God. I know that because I told you this has been a very difficult series to write because I stink at this. I do. Finding that regular rhythm, it's so hard when we constantly feel bombarded and pulled in every direction to say, God, I'll stop. I'll stop to be with you. I don't feel like I have the time to stop. That's a problem. That's a problem. So I find my best time, at least for me, is in the evenings. It's the kids are in bed. Eileen's usually in bed, and I can sit up maybe with my journal in my office and just start to write, God, where did I see you today? Where did I completely miss you? What's coming up tomorrow that my heart needs to be ready for? Because I know that as I rest tonight, I'm going to desperately need you more tomorrow than I do right now. And those times have been the most fueling times in my life. I can't think of a better way to fall asleep than with the things of God on my brain. It really helps me, that Psalm 127 where it says, God grants sleep to those he loves. That's how I find my God loves me. He tells me right before I go to bed. I recognize that there's a bunch of stuff that you got to get done. You won't be nearly as effective if you can't prioritize that time with God. It will sharpen you. I know that sounds awkward and weird because it's like, how can I do better at all that I've got to do if I'm making more time for God? It's the only way it'll start to help you to slow down. The second step, really quick, is to reduce distractions. Jesus is constantly being distracted with people, right? And different requests, different commentaries on what he should and shouldn't be doing. So he's like, you know what? We need to reduce distractions. There's opportunities and things that we could do. They're not all bad. They're just not essential. It doesn't sound different from our schedules today, does it? There are so many things vying for our time and attention that we don't know what to do. Think about that for a second. We are trying to be pulled everywhere. Everywhere. Our texts are going off. Tweets are going off. I'll confess to you that there are times I feel like I look at my screen more than I look at like my kids' faces, more than I look into my wife's eyes. I know more about what's going on here than them sometimes. That kills me. Why? Because when I get a text, my watch goes off. You know, I've got like dings everywhere. Every computer tells me someone is doing something somewhere that you need to know about. It's crazy. We are distracted. You stop at a red light, maybe like I do, and you check your phone. Why are we checking our phones at red lights? What is so important that we will be needed in that moment? I may sound like a jerk saying this, but you're not nearly as important as you think you are. And neither am I. Nothing is going to be needed so essentially at a red light or at the dinner table that we've got to be stuck to the distractions that are always vying for us. They tailor make our advertisements to appeal to us. We've got to stop and eliminate distractions. Does that mean jumping off Twitter or Instagram or, you know, whatever it is? If it's consuming all that you have and it's all that you find you're doing, yes, that's what it means. There are seasons I have to delete most of my social media because I'm like, I hate this. I'm always on it. You got to get rid of it. Maybe there's seasons you can handle it. There's a great book out by a woman named Sherry Turkle. And this is an amazing book if you have the chance to read it. It's called Reclaiming Conversation. And in the book, she says this: we are forever elsewhere, at class or at church or at business meetings. We pay attention to what interests us. And then when it doesn't, we look to our devices to find something that does. There's now a word in the dictionary called fubbing. It means maintaining eye contact while texting. You giggle. If you've ever hung out with someone in the millennial or under age range, they own this. They can genuinely look you in the eye while they text someone back. How'd you do that? It's easy. I'm fubbing. You didn't even know that was a word until now. We're forever elsewhere. Maybe this morning when we started this, you're thinking, I don't want to know about money or time. I'd rather know about my fantasy team. I can't believe Julio Jones scored me that many points. If you have him, congratulations. Good week. we are constantly distracted. We are constantly being pulled everywhere, and we can no longer be present, and we have to. If we want to slow down the pace of our schedule, we've got to reduce the amount of distractions. And I know that's hard for all of us. I get it. I hate this point of my sermon. I hate it because I suck at this. I just do. But if we're going to slow down to gain control of our time, we have to do it. The third one is quick, and that's say no. The third step to slowing down is we got to say no. We say yes to too many things. We just do. Someone needs help, and we immediately say yes. We have no idea how that's going to impact our time, our schedule, or whatever it is. We immediately say yes to things. And because of that, we're overwhelmed. Can I tell you that it is okay to say no to things? When my wife was reading this, she looked at me and said, Jimmy, you say this like every other week at church. Don't you want to have a different point in a sermon? I said, you know, I don't say it every... And I started to think back. I'm like, dang, I say that a lot. So maybe you're right. How are you doing at saying no? And she dropped her head and she goes, you could say it again. I get this. Can I tell you? Jesus got this, though. He said no to things. Do you know he was urgently requested to come and heal one of his best friends? And you know what he says? It's not the right time. It's not the right time. I don't need to go now. There's something else that needs to happen. He said no. Jesus, wait, I see that it's really early in the morning. We found you. There's this huge group of people. We can do this huge amount of ministry. Nope. Nope, we need to go somewhere else and do something different. That's not what it is right now. You can say no. You can. And if it makes you feel guilty, you need to get over it. Because you can say no. If Crossbridge asks you to do something and you don't have the capacity to do it, you know what you could say? No. And it's okay. I loved that we had a small group last year and someone skipped a small group meeting and I'm like, oh, we missed you. What happened? And they're like, I just felt like the week was too busy. I hadn't seen my family and this was the most important thing. I had to say no to small groups so I could say yes to them. The whole small group the next week's high-fiving them on the couch. Why? Because they knew what was most important. John, thanks for saying no. That was the best. I'm thankful that we have elders who say no to things because there's priorities in our life. We've got to say no if we're going to gain control of our time. And the last one, the last step is we got to take a Sabbath. Yeah, I know you're looking and be like, that's a pipe dream, Jimmy. I'm not getting 24 hours off. I know you feel that way. But you can't live without that. If Jesus needed to take a Sabbath, He's far more awesome than you and me. We need to do this. It's a command to us and a gift for us. For us as a staff, we Sabbath every Friday collectively. If you send us an email, text, or voicemail, whatever, on a Friday, you will most likely not get anything back in return. And the reason for that is we need a day away from everything. Church is all-consuming. There's always issues. Did you know that? Our church is so messed up, there's always issues. Most of the time, they're right here, but there are always issues. We got to stop. And so we do. Will, did you like your Sabbath this week? Yeah. You did. Did you take a nap?
4 hours.
4 hour nap? It's nice, right? Takes a 4 hour nap. All I see him on this morning is like, yo, we get to do this. I'm like, why you got so much energy? He's like, I took a nap. We got to benefit from a nap. Because we got to worship pretty intense. That's how you gain control of your time. You got to slow it down. Take a Sabbath. If you think that's a pipe dream, start with 6 hours. Turn your phone off for 6 hours. How crazy would that be? It's a gift from God, not a burden. Do it. It will benefit you. When we have this, I simply want to close with the idea. If we want to slow down our schedule, please, the first and foremost thing is prioritize your time with God. Make this the most important one. Don't try to tackle all four of these this week and be like, I'm going to spend like 18 hours with God and say no to everyone and only do the most important things. And I'm going to take, since all the kids are off of school, all week off and really like super Sabbath. We should super Sabbath. No, wait. That's not realistic. Prioritize with God, make that the most important thing. And then pick one of those other three, just one, and say, this week, I'm going to try this and step towards it. Just step towards it. If you try to do it all at the same time, you're going to feel guilty. You're going to feel like you're doing something else. And it completely defeats the purpose of living a life that's generous, because I fear that there are people who desperately need us that we miss because we're too busy to notice. If we want to live generously, we have to gain control of the most important resource we have, and that is time. I pray that Crossbridge is a place that we do this well, that we learn about this well, and that we call each other to it. With that in mind, will you pray with me as our worship team comes back up? God, I confess to you this morning that I'm not the best at timing. I confess to you that my journal from 16 on till now is filled with not getting timing right, feeling undisciplined and scattered. And in those seasons where time with you is right and rich, when I'm regularly saying no to things that don't matter because there's other things that really do, when my days off are actually days off and not days stressing, I feel like I'm closer to you and a much better man, a husband, a dad, pastor. And I pray, God, that you would remove a spirit of guilt over this church and over our people now, that saying no to things means they're not doing enough, and taking some time actually to rest and rejuvenate, to watch a movie and not feel guilty about it, to take a nap, to go play golf or video games, because that's not happening all week. We work our tails off those 6 days, but on that day we can rest. I pray that there would not be a spirit of guilt, but a spirit of freedom and a release to live this generous life. And so God, this morning I thank you for giving so generously to us. You've given us the gift of Jesus and the gift of life and salvation. You've given us the gift of Sabbath, and I pray that we would manage and learn these gifts well and allow them to permeate everything about us, that we would be a giving church, not a taking place. God, as we take an opportunity to give back to you again today, I pray that you would bless this time as we give our tithes, we give our offerings. We trust that you can do amazing things, even greater than Trunk or Treat last week. You have bigger dreams. I pray that we would respond to those. Thank you, Jesus. It's in your name we pray. Amen.